Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me. We have a great interview coming up for really interesting law enforcement officer who's touching lives in some very interesting ways. And then I'm going to give you my view from the blue. In fact, let's do that right now. Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Last week, I spoke about the horrors that were taking place at the mass shooting in Las Vegas. As you know, probably, this is my hometown. Las Vegas is where I live. It's where I served my community for 24 years on the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. And the mass shooting that took place here has devastated my community. It has broken hearts. It has changed the way the world views Las Vegas, and has changed the lives of so many. The death toll is almost 60 now, and is expected to go higher. The number of people injured is approaching 500. It's absolutely unspeakable what one man was capable of doing. What I want to talk about is the bravery of the officers who responded to this. The bravery of the officers who were on duty, who were off duty, who came in on their own time when they heard about the incident. The officers who approached the room knowing that this was a heavily armed gunman and breached the door. Luckily, this individual had already killed himself, but they didn't know that. And they were willing to approach this room, even thinking that there were explosives, because it appeared to be that way from the wires that were coming out of the room. You know, the bravery that was shown is characteristic of almost everyone in law enforcement. But I couldn't have been prouder of those four officers who breached that door and went in to engage that suspect. Happily, he was already dead, so those officers were not in as much danger as they could have been, of course. But not only were those officers incredibly brave, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police officer who lost his life, who had been off duty and was in the crowd, and he was in the crowd with his wife, and when the shooting started, he went into complete cop mode and went trying to rescue others when he took a fatal round. And he was quite a man, Charleston Hartfield. And he has a book out there. He actually wrote a book called Memoirs of a Public Servant. I urge you to buy this book and help make this a bestseller for his family. It's his legacy. And it's, go on to Amazon, Memoirs of a Public Servant, and do that in honor of Charleston Hartfield. There were tremendous amounts of people who rose to the occasion. Civilians, off-duty firefighters, off-duty paramedics, off-duty police officers from all over the country. And stories of that heroism is really what needs to be remembered instead of that piece of garbage that committed this despicable act. So I just want to talk about that for a brief moment before I talk about other things from my view from the blue. But I think that the lives that were altered during this incident permanently changed the lives of so many. And those people who gave their lives, may they rest in peace. Now I want to talk about some of the I want to talk about some of the insanity that I've been seeing on the media. First of all, you know, this whole kneeling at this football game garbage. I'm getting so sick of these football players playing their games and you know, holding the fans hostage while they make their ridiculous political statement on police brutality, taking a knee when our national anthem is played. I for one support Donald Trump's view on this when he called them a bunch of SOBs, and they need to stand up. I also support Vice President Pence when he attended a football game. When those players took a knee, he got up and said, adios. You know, some call that grandstanding. Well, the only people that are grandstanding are those self-entitled punk football players. And while we're on that subject, let me tell you what's going on up in Michigan. I'm just sick of this. The Michigan superintendent of the state police, she's in trouble. Her name is Colonel Christy Kibbe Etu, and she's was apparently pissed off, just like most of us are, about these players and their antics. And but she made the mistake of actually voicing an opinion. God help us if you actually voice an opinion on social media that doesn't go along with the political narrative. Good God. So here's what she did. She wrote, or she had a meme published on him. Meme. And here's what it said. Dear NFL, we will not support millionaire ingrates who hate America and disrespect our armed forces and veterans. Who wins a football game has zero impact on our lives. Who fights for and defends our nation has every impact on our lives. We stand with the heroes, not a bunch of rich, entitled, arrogant, ungrateful, anti-American degenerates. Signed, We the People. Well, you know what? I couldn't agree more. But it didn't take long for the social justice warriors, those other entitled people and politicians to jump all over her. I mean, good God, they want to have her tarred and feathered, they want her fired, they want her prosecuted, they want her shot at dawn. I mean, it's nauseating. Nauseating. So shortly after she posted this, she was basically forced into apologizing for it. I'm sorry she apologized, to tell you the truth. I think she should have stood her ground and said, too bad, this is the way I felt. But I understand an official, as the head of the police agency, you know, she's got to do a certain amount of butt kissing, which is, you know, unfortunately what is necessary for a lot of those chiefs, which is why they pull their heads in like turtles. But, you know, the Governor Rick Snyder met with members of the Michigan Legislative Black Caucus who still want the director of the Michigan State Police to resign for sharing a controversial Facebook meme. And so they quote all these politicians who are jumping on this bandwagon. Who cares about the job that she's been doing? She had the guts to put out an opinion about these entitled football players. What, you know what? It's time for somebody to stand up. It's time for somebody to take a stand and realize that, you know what? You're a cop. You still have your First Amendment rights, and they need to be put out there so for all the public to see. And let's see what the public thinks. And I think that I wish that this superintendent, that she retains her job, because certainly just for political considerations, removing her from that position would be nothing but a giving in to the political correctness. So that's part of my view from the blue, but you know, there's more going on. A videotape has been put out in the public. Of course, it's another, you know, taken from a cell phone, of an incident in New York where a black suspect is being arrested by two white cops. Well, the black suspect turns out to be 16 years old. He's already a career criminal. He's done armed robberies. He's really a bad seed. And while they're trying to arrest him, he gets in a fight with the police. He starts choking the officer who's underneath him and will not let him go, even though the officer on top of him is trying to get him into custody and is punching him because he's literally killing the cop that's under him. And you should see the public. You should see the people that are gathered around him yelling and screaming at the cops. Some are pulling at them. Instead of worried about the police officer who is literally fighting for his life, they try to make this appear that it's police brutality. And what happens, of course, this little snippet of videotape goes viral, and once again, it's the police who are being called out for this. Well, you know what? No police use of force looks good. When you refuse to comply, when you want to fight the police, you're going to get something that you should be getting, and that's going to jail. And if it takes them a number of punches to do it, well, too bad. That's my view from the blue. I want to take a moment to tell you about an amazing book that's coming out, and I urge everyone to get onto this website and purchase it now. If you get it now, you'll actually be able to order it before its release. It's called Blue Lives Matter in the Line of Duty, and I had a couple guests on last week's show or the week before, and these are the two authors, Steve Cooley, who was the district attorney of the County of Los Angeles for, I think, 3 terms, and one of his assistant district attorneys, Robert Shim. Now, this book is all about the deaths of law enforcement officers in the line of duty, but not only is it about celebrating their lives, but it also gives lessons learned which might save other police officers. So I urge you to buy this book, especially if you know someone in law enforcement. It'd be a great gift. And if you get it now on this website that I'm going to give you, TitletownPublishing.com, you can pre-order the book and have it delivered before the actual release date. So it's called Blue Lives Matter in the Line of Duty, and go to TitletownPublishing.com. That's TitletownPublishing.com, and order your copy. Before we take a walk into the interview room, one thing I wanted to let you know is that I recently had the honor of being a keynote speaker down in Texas. And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at RandySutton@AmericaOutloud.com. Thanks. Now let's take a walk into the interview room.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
With me in the interview room, Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a 28-year police veteran. And not only has he done patrol work, investigative work, but his assignments have included a lot of a variety of other things, which are going to be germane to the conversation that we're going to have. Tim Sutton, and no relation. We're not playing favorites here. Tim Sutton is not related to Randy Sutton, but he certainly is a great guest. Thanks for being on Blue Lives Radio, Tim.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate you having me.
You know, your law enforcement experience, you got almost three decades. It has led you to create the website, abetterunderstanding.com. That's abetterunderstanding.com. What was it that led you to do this? And tell us about your efforts, because what Tim is doing, ladies and gentlemen, is touching a lot of lives of those people who are affected by brain disorders, autism, Alzheimer's, and other type of disorders like that. So give us a little background, Tim.
Sure. And just to clarify, because it's one little dash, but the website, if anybody would like to check it out, is a-betterunderstanding.com, and they can find out all the information about me and why I do what I do. But I appreciate the opportunity to share it. Back in 2003, my agency here in Virginia started a program that deals with the wanderers, the individuals with cognitive disorders who tend to wander off and get lost. And, you know, as we see on the news, law enforcement, public safety is frequently looking for people who have wandered off, gotten lost. I started to meet a lot of families that were dealing with the autism and intellectual disabilities, as well as caregivers dealing with family members who had Alzheimer's and dementia. And I began to see that while the wandering or the elopement of the individuals with autism was a huge issue, the families and the caregivers were dealing with so much more. And as I met them and started realizing that many of the calls for service my deputies were responding on were actually related to the autism, intellectual disabilities, and the Alzheimer's. The problem was the officers had not been educated to recognize a lot of it. They were doing what they were trained to do. However, what I try to do is train officers to understand the behaviors they may see in these instances, basically to change the way we can do things. You know, we all who have been in this job have those frequent flyers, the individuals we're responding to calls every night, whether it's somebody who says somebody broke into my house and they're living in the attic, or they're, the child who has a meltdown. We go to these calls, some of these calls nightly, you know, and the goal of what I'm trying to do with a better understanding is to educate officers. Our main goal is to get out there and handle the call effectively. You know, right. Without the information and the education, we go out there and we deal with it and we clear up. Now, with the education, you'll understand why some of these things are happening, and you may realize you've got more resources at your disposal, and there are more resources out there for the families to help them deal with the situations. And we're expending a lot of manpower hours, law enforcement, public safety across the country, making these repeat calls. If we can get out there and handle it effectively, maybe it'll cut it down to once a week where we may have to respond, but it'll at least ease some of the stress on the officers.
When you're talking about training your officers, you hit on a whole bunch of different topics here, or different subjects that are really important. Many very high profile violent encounters that have taken place have been with people with these type of disorders, and it's been demonstrated, unfortunately, in some very high profile events, that had the officer had the knowledge or the skill and training to deal with an individual with autism, then perhaps the result of the encounter would have come out much different.
Right. And, you know, I could get out there and a couple people I teach with, we could get out there and we could train every officer in the country. That's not going to stop these incidents from happening. What I hope to do is maybe cut down on the number of instances. What I'm trying to get across and promote are these peaceful interactions that lead to positive outcomes. We don't need more unfortunate situations. I want every officer to go home at the end of the night. That's the number one goal.
Right.
You know, but if somebody perceives a threat to themselves and they do their job. They protect themselves, and in a law enforcement capacity, they do their job. If somebody does get injured, that happens. But what I cannot imagine the feeling, and I know it's happened, and I've talked to officers that have had this happen, where you end up having to use a use force, which I prefer to call reacting to resistance, later to find out that that individual didn't actually mean them harm. They weren't trying to hurt them. But that officer doesn't know that, and I don't want my training to lead the officers to become complacent. They just need to be aware. I had a situation actually last week where an officer had been to my training, and he ended up coming up on an 18-year-old with autism, just lying on a sidewalk. As he approached the officer, as he approached the individual, he asked him to get up, and the 18-year-old said, "Leave me alone," and tried to start walking away. And this officer had been to my training 2 weeks prior. And he said that light bulb went off. He said, "I would have thought I had, you know, some 18-year-old with an attitude problem where I said, 'Wait a minute, come here, what are you doing?'" He said, "I picked up on some of those behaviors and realized what the situation was him down. And he didn't really want to answer my questions. I found out later he's somewhat non-speaking. So the officer, not knowing anything about autism, intellectual disability, may have just thought that this 18-year-old who had autism, who looks no different than anybody else, if they do not have an underlying condition, most people with autism look just like you and me. There is no indicator, such as, you know, Down syndrome, you may see somebody and be able to pick up on the fact that it's Down. But with autism, for the most part, you don't recognize any physical features that would indicate otherwise. But this officer said, as soon as I started to try to communicate with him, I picked up on some things that you gave me from the training, and I realized, okay, I'm not dealing with a teenager with an attitude. I'm dealing with the child with an intellectual disability. So, again, I'm not going to be able to stop all these negative and unfortunate situations, but if I can get out there and raise awareness so that officers could be aware of these things, I mean, it's like domestic violence laws. 25 years ago, you know, we were just starting to dig around and get involved and realize this is an issue we need to address. Therefore, we have state codes now that say that mandate arrest in domestic violence cases, depending on the situations. Well, I feel like the autism, special needs, this whole population, I think it's evolving to where everybody needs this training. I don't necessarily think it's only public safety. You know, person with autism is 7 times more likely to have an encounter with law enforcement than the average person. You've got many parents out there with children with autism who think ahead 15, 20 years. And they're like, "My child will still have these behaviors, and then they're going to be an adult." You know, we can't sit there and think autism and think child. There's so many people out here who are adults with autism and intellectual disabilities, never been diagnosed, but it doesn't mean they don't have it.
Sure.
So if we can get out there and handle some of these interactions and handle them better, you know, I've heard many parents say they wish they live one day longer than their child, because if I'm not here, who's going to take care of them? And that child may be an adult and be out in public on their own and nobody's around. And that law enforcement officer, you know, may have an encounter. Is that officer going to understand what autism is? So hopefully he can handle the situation better.
What are some of the signs that a police officer should look for when the encounter takes place?
Well, you know, I'm talking autism now, and I'll say the same for Alzheimer's and dementias. If you meet one person with any of those disorders or Alzheimer's disease, you've met one person. Every single one is different. You know, autism, that's why they call it a spectrum, because everybody falls at a different place on the spectrum. One thing you may see is a lack of eye contact. You know, and in our line of work, you know as well as I do, if you're asking somebody questions and they don't look you in the eye when they're answering you, what are they being?
Yeah, they're being deceptive.
But that's not necessarily the way it is with autism. There is many of them have a lack of eye contact. There may be stemming, which is self-stimulating activity, such as flapping their hands, turning around in the circles, waving their arms, humming to drown out some of the sensory issues, because autism and a lot of these intellectual disabilities are very sensory driven. And things that may overstimulate them, they're trying to react to calm themselves down. And that's why you have this stemming, the shaking of the hands. They're dealing with something that's stressing them out. And if you think about our job in law enforcement, most everything we have and most everything we do is stimulating. It is the blue lights, red lights flashing, the loud radios, the siren. Because somebody with autism, their senses, their challenges in every sense that they have. Their hearing, taste, smell, sight, and touch. So when we have these encounters, they may start to stress out. It may be a situation where you need to turn your blue lights off if it's safe to do that. That may be contributing to their non-compliance. So you could tone these things down, turn the radio down, do whatever you have to. But again, if you've met one, you've met one. You've got to take it case by case.
Interesting. Let me ask you this. Is there an estimate of how many people are affected by autism in the United States?
I don't have the exact number for the United States, but I do know right now, according to Autism Speaks, the rate right now is one in every 68 births.
That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
And the fact is, nobody really knows why it's happening, and there is no cure. There are some things, interventions you can use to help alleviate some of the issues. I know the digestive senses and things, that's been a big push for gluten-free, casein-free diets, and that's assisted a lot of families. Many of them are on medication to help them sleep and different things. But, you know, we've got to train our people. And honestly, I don't think it's just law enforcement. I'm actually working a proposal now for a owner of 13 amusement parks in the country to train their security officers to understand these. I think there's a need in hospitals. You know, how overstimulating is an emergency room when you bring somebody in with all the bells and whistles? And if that individual, and think about it, in a hospital setting where they're trying to stick needles and tubes in the individual, and then look at law enforcement where we may go put our hands on somebody, if their skin is hypersensitive, where just a simple hand touching their shoulder feels like razor blades going through their skin.
I had no idea that autism had that type of sensory overload.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's their deficits and things in every sense. Every single one is different. And that's why you can't say, well, I've had a lot of parents of children on the spectrum come to my classes. And in some cases, I see them come in with a little bit of an attitude, and I can understand it because I don't have children with special needs. And I'm sure they're thinking, well, who is he to stand up in front of me trying to tell me what I live? Well, I'm not trying to tell them anything that they don't already know about their child. They live it 24/7. I try to give people a snapshot of, hey, we dealt with this situation, and this is where it went. We dealt with this situation. But just because they live with their child with autism doesn't mean they're going to be able to interact and deal with another child on the spectrum. And I get parents coming up thanking me so much for getting the information out. And, you know, the uniform, I tell you, the uniform has afforded me opportunities to be able to get in some of the venues to share this information, where had I not had the uniform, I probably would not have been, you know, I would have been overlooked. I realize that. But again, I think law enforcement, public safety, fire, EMS, you think about the airlines. We read often about a child had a meltdown on a plane. They turned the plane around, kicked the family off. TSA, how overwhelming could that be for somebody with autism going through TSA? Where you have noncompliance, and then they decide to do a pat down. And if they pat down and all of a sudden it feels like razor blades cutting through their skin, would a reasonable person react if they had that feeling?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they would. You're going to protect yourself. And then again, if they're non-speaking and can't articulate what's going on, how do you know? Unless there's a caregiver or somebody there that's familiar with them. But you've got adults with autism who travel alone. They're out there working in the communities. They're out there driving down the road. You know, tons of people with autism driving. I actually worked with a mother 3 years ago. She had contacted me and said, you know, I understand you're teaching autism here in Virginia. I don't understand what the two have to do with each other. And I said, well, have you got a child on the spectrum? She said, I've got a 9-year-old son. His name is JP. And I said, well, I want you to bump it ahead 15, 20 years and imagine him out in public by himself. And imagine that officer walks up trying to have an interaction with him. Could he possibly misinterpret something? So she was familiar with one of the senators here in Virginia. We actually got JP's law passed where individuals with autism, intellectual disability, developmental disabilities can voluntarily go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and have an indicator placed on their ID or their license that says ASD or ID to indicate to that officer, should they get stopped, that, okay, well, I'm dealing with somebody with autism.
That's really interesting.
What I hope that propagates is a mandate, you know, I'd like to see it nationwide, where officers are mandated to receive training. Because if the officer has not been trained to understand autism or intellectual disabilities, what does that marker on that ID mean? Are they going to do things different?
Right, right. What does the training consist of?
I will typically do a 4-hour autism and a 4 hours Alzheimer's, and it's mostly lecture, interaction with the class. I like to leave my trainings having learned something. And what I find is many of the students in the class are affected by autism. And when I do the Alzheimer's part, many of them are personally affected by Alzheimer's. So it's not just a professional connection, it's a personal connection. And I think it hits home. I do a 4-hour and 4-hour. I can give you two both topics in one day. I also travel with a gentleman, Hank Levinson. He's a retired lieutenant out of Gretna, New Orleans. He lives in Texas, and he's got a business called Next Generation Training. We're traveling to Atlanta in about 3 weeks. We do a full day of Alzheimer's training. And we're actually going down there to do a train the trainer. So it'll be a 2-day. We teach the class, and then we teach the trainers in Georgia to be able to teach this class. To get it out there, we were in Atlanta in August and did the 1-day class, and they've asked us to come back. I can do whatever. I like being able to give 4 hours and 4 hours to give you both topics. And while Alzheimer's and autism are not the same, you know, autism is not a mental health disorder, okay? It is a cognitive disorder. Alzheimer's is not a mental health disorder. It is actually a disease. And your other dementias are symptoms of different, you know, Parkinson's or different other things. The thing is, autism and Alzheimer's, many times the way you interact with the individuals is very similar. That's why I'm able to tie that all in. Because of a lot of similarities. And we've actually been able to incorporate this training locally into, I don't know if you're familiar with the CIT training, the crisis intervention training,
sure,
that deals with mental health issues. And even though it's a 40-hour class here, even though these two are not mental health issues, many times the way we have to deal with it falls along the same lines. So it gives you an understanding of how to interact. And, you know, you talk about our job in law enforcement. Our job is to protect, you know. And if you think about these children with special needs, not just autism, I'm talking special needs in general. You know, there's studies out there from 2000 that about 83% of developmentally disabled females and about 32% of males are victims of sexual assault.
Wow.
And if you think about it, if they're nonverbal, how do they tell somebody?
Right.
How do they tell somebody? Or if they are they able to articulate? One thing you may see with autism is they may speak in a monotone voice, very loud, and may not be able to collect their thoughts and process. You ask them a question, it may take 10 seconds, 15 seconds for them to process the question to be able to give you an answer. I've actually had a lot of people with autism come to my classes, and they sit through it, and I ask them to come up. You know, I'm like, look, I can sit up here and tell you about autism all day long, but I want them to see it. I want them to see the individual they may pull over. And it's very eye-opening for the recruits when I do the academies and different in-services, because they'll ask the person a question, and it'll take them 10, 15 seconds to process it, and then they'll answer. You ask them another question, and they may start shaking their head or shaking their hand, just looking around the room. They're not trying to come up with a lie or, you know, some fake answer. They're processing what you asked, and they're trying to give you the answer that you need. But you also have to look at the fact, as far as special needs and victimization, many of these children are taught when an adult tells you to do something, you do it. Now, they want friends. They want the same thing everybody else has. And if sometimes if somebody gives you attention, you consider, you think, oh, they're being my friend.
Uh-huh.
And this is also a source of bullying. They come up and they want, you know, they're giving them some attention. But again, many times compliance is taught to these kids. When an adult tells you to do something, you do it. And you know that's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
And again, if they can't articulate what's going on, if they can't articulate the abuse, then it just keeps going on. And what better victim than somebody that can't tell you what's happening? And as far as Alzheimer's, you know, these individuals are losing their short-term memory. They can tell you everything from 20, 30 years ago. I've got a lady in my county who is in her 80s, and I will go meet with her, and all she'll tell me about is when she's, you know, she thinks she's 16 years old, and she'll tell me about coming home from school and playing basketball, but she has no idea who the people in the house are with her, and it's her daughter, son-in-law, and grandson. She can tell me everything about high school and the game that they played last night, but she could not tell me, well, what she had for breakfast, much less that she had breakfast. So these memories are just going away. So in that aspect with the elderly, you look at elder abuse that's going on, the scams we're dealing with. What better victim than somebody that can't remember what happened? You know, you get to a domestic, and I've had it happen, where the wife is there with a black eye, husband's eating dinner. And I say, well, can you tell me what happened? Well, he was screaming that the house was on fire, and I was afraid he was going to run out of the house. I just got him home from the hospital. He's got Alzheimer's, and he was trying to get out of the house, and he grabbed me and threw me down. I hit my head on the coffee table. Well, the next thing she says to me, he doesn't even know I'm his wife.
Right.
He knows I take care of him. Well, with the push with domestic violence, many would think, okay, I've got a predominant aggressor. I've got signs. I shall make an arrest. Well, some states, yes. Some states give you an out if there are extenuating circumstances that will call for another course of action. You know, because you take somebody like that, in his mind, he doesn't even remember that anything happened.
Of course.
But you go in, you put handcuffs on him. He doesn't know why you're handcuffing him. Could you potentially have a fight, resisting arrest, assault on a law enforcement officer? Then you take him to a lockdown facility and place him in there, where the next day the corrections officers come in. He's laying there in a pool of blood. And they say, hey, what happened? What's he going to tell them? I don't know.
Oh, boy. You've just talked about some absolutely nightmare scenarios. And as you said, you know, there needs to be some way to address those type of issues so that
right.
that those mandates, I mean, you know, common sense is probably the most important part of policing.
And well, the sad part is common sense is not all that common.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're absolutely correct. I know. You know, I want to talk about one thing that you mentioned before that I've never heard about. We're talking about the wanderers, the people that you know, leave the homes. You know, as you know, that there are so many Americans whose families are affected by these type of disorders, and it's just heartbreaking. But you were talking about a tracking system that I found very interesting. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, the original company that started this, they are Project Lifesaver, based out of Chesapeake, and I believe Chief Saunders has actually moved part of the operation down to Florida. What it is, and there's a couple other companies out there doing this these days, it uses radio frequency. It does not use GPS. However, there are companies out there that have GPS trackers. They're all great tools. But what our program is, we go out and meet the families, and we place a tracking device on them. It uses radio frequencies, like I said. And the individual who wanders wears it 24 hours a day, like a watch or or something on their wrist or ankle. And when and if they do take off, elope, wander off, the caregiver calls 911. We respond out. We've got certain officers that are trained with the equipment to do the tracking. We head to where their point last seen and have our equipment on, and we just ride until we pick a signal up. We can get out of the car and walk right to them. Again, the GPS is great, and I've got a lot of families who have purchased GPS systems that are on the child or attached to their clothing, and they're in our Project Lifesaver program. I think it's great to use both. And people wonder, why use radio, why radio frequencies? Well, anybody and everybody who has satellite radio knows that if you're going down the road and you go underneath an overpass, it cuts out. Well, let's say that individual with Alzheimer's wanders off, they get tired, they crawl up underneath of something or an overpass and go to sleep.
Right.
Those satellites may not be able to pick that signal up. These radio frequencies are constantly traveling along, you know, straight out, so you can pick those signals up. But, yeah, the searches, you know, and what you find with autism, and this is a huge point that I'm trying to get out there. According to the National Association of Autism, between 2009 and 2011, 91% of all deaths related to wandering with children with autism resulted in drowning.
Wow.
With autism, there is no element of fear for many of these individuals. They don't understand that if I do this, this will happen. If I walk into that pond and I don't know how to swim and I keep on walking, they don't realize they will drown. If I walk out into the street, I will get struck by a car. You know, they don't have this element of fear. And imagine, you know, I know one little boy, actually, he's 10 years old, that I deal with on a regular basis, go visit with him. In the middle of night, if he hears something outside of the house, he will go grab his toy gun, and he will sneak out of the house trying to find the bad guy.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, and we're talking a single mom trying to raise, you know, this boy. And many of these parents are sitting there up all night worried, what happens if they just decide they want to go do this, go do that, or they get something, you know, many of them are fixated on things. There's like one or two things that they are just obsessed with that they want to talk about all the time. If they get in their mind some type of fast food restaurant, 2 o'clock in the morning, I want this, I want a milkshake. They will do everything in their power to get out of the house and go get what they want or do whatever they need to do. I've got one boy that I deal with on a daily basis, just about. We text back and forth, and he asks me a lot of legal questions. That's one of his fixations. But one of his others is the Baltimore Orioles. He could tell you anything and everything about the Baltimore Orioles you would ever want to know. And I actually went with him. My son and I went up with him and his mom to Autism Speaks Day at Camden Yards. And we had a bunch of the retired ball players who do a lot of commentating sitting there talking to him. He was asking them questions, quizzing them on players, past and present, and they did not know the answers. And they said, you know, we need you up in there with us to do the commentating because you've got so much information. But I know when I deal with him, if he's having a meltdown or he's upset, I know that if I go in there and bring up the Baltimore Orioles, I can pull the reins in, and I can bring him in, and we can, you know, I might have to throw some Orioles information in there, but then I can ask him a question about this or that, and then bring up the Orioles again. I can keep him engaged, and that's, you know, we need to know those little things so we can get the information. You know, people with these intellectual disabilities and autism, they're brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It's one thing a lady had taught me that I taught with is everybody has something to say. I don't care if you're sitting in my class and you're laid back with your arms crossed, acting like you're not paying attention. You know, that says something. You know, we all have something to say, but we need to figure out how they say it. It's a challenge and obstacle. They're not, if they can't speak to us, they're not going to overcome that obstacle. It's up to us to overcome or improvise and find a way. Whether it's taking your computer out of your car, sitting it on the hood and putting it in front of them, they might be able to type a huge long letter and give you a description of the suspect, give you a license plate. They may be able to draw you a picture. There's some amazing videos out there, some out on the line, of people with autism who have savant skills, but they can't carry on a conversation. With autism, there are three main areas. There are social skills that are challenged, there are communication skills that are challenged, and they're behavioral, the repetitive movements, the stimming, the need for routine, having to have, you know, if Thursday night is pizza night, then every Thursday night better be pizza night. And I told you the issue with the senses, you know, it better be the same pizza, because if it's not, and you try to sneak a different pizza pizza in there, they're going to chew it up and spit it out. You know, I've talked to so many families about that. They need routine. They need order. They need structure. And honestly, when we come into the picture in public safety, are we normally part of the routine?
No, sure not.
No. So parents know that. And think a lot of the special needs parents in the neighborhood, everybody around them knows, oh, that's the family that has a child that lays in the front yard beating their head on the ground screaming.
Yeah.
So they're already, you know, under the microscope. Now, when that child does have a meltdown or gets out of control, do you really think they want one, two, maybe three police cars pulling up in the driveway?
Yeah, right.
So when we do get called, it's a crisis. I mean, it's gotten to the point where they don't know what else to do. And they also, many people, I think the general perception of law enforcement is if they show up, somebody usually leaves with them. Or they'll contact CPS, or with elderly, they'll contact APS. And I'm going to be told I'm a bad caregiver, or I'm a bad parent, and I may lose my loved one. So they're very hesitant to call us. And that's why I love being able to go meet these families and sit down with them. And I'll go over, I'm like, with Alzheimer's, say, well, are they doing this? Are they sundowning? And they're asking me, what is that? I say, well, are they getting real agitated or irritated in the evening, the lashing out? And I've got a timeline that I'll, you know, build their life and start erasing and showing them what's going on. And many of them just need, they need to vent. The
right.
caregivers, the parents, they need to vent. And I give them my card. I'm like, look, here's the thing. If you need to scream, yell, get it out, you've got my number. Call. I say, you're not going to offend me. You're not going to hurt my feelings, but you need to get it out. I'll sit there and talk to you and let you cry to get it out. They need the understanding of what they're dealing with. And unfortunately, with Alzheimer's and dementia, many times, once people hear that, you know, once the friends hear that someone, you know, so-and-so has Alzheimer's dementia, they start to disappear.
Right, right, right.
So you end up with a caregiver that's by themselves, and they don't really know what to do. And who in the world would ever expect somebody with a gun and a badge to come into your house and speak to you intelligently about what you're dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia, or autism? I mean,
You're describing to me, I mean, this is a fascinating conversation to me. As a 34-year police veteran, I am learning something now that I wish I had known as a young officer. I could have assimilated this and probably been a better cop. And so
the light bulb has gone off, and you probably realize some calls for service that you
yes.
handled. Where hey, this is that's what I love about when I have veteran officers in my class. And I know many of them are coming there looking at the sheet going, Lord, what am I going to listen to? I got to listen to this all day. And by the time I finish, they're so blown away. And I know I can see it during the class that they're thinking about, I went on that call, and this is exactly what he's talking
right.
about.
Well, we're running out of time, Tim. How can my folks contact you to arrange for this training?
They can check my website. I've got my, a-betteronderstanding.com, and there's a link on there. If they want to email me directly, it's info@a-betteronderstanding.com. Please just send me an email, and we'll work it out. You know, like I said, we need to get this information out.
Do you train all over the country?
Yes, I do. We'll be going to Atlanta to teach the two-day train the trainer, and then I've got an agency in Texas that's trying to get me out there the week after on my days off to actually train the whole department. They're looking to do half the department one day, half the department the next day. They see the importance of it. And, you know, my main thing is get the information out and so we don't have more of these unfortunate situations. And I don't want an unfortunate situation. Let's get out there and train them before that happens instead of trying
Absolutely.
To play catch up afterwards.
Absolutely. Well, clearly, as you wander off into retirement yourself, you got 28 years on, you're in the one bad day club. I can see that you're going to be a very, very busy retired gentleman. I can see that.
I hope so. It's just waking people up to realize that they need it. Just give me 30 minutes and I think you'll understand and it'll become important.
Well, I appreciate
it. So that's all I ask.
I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, what you're, in essence, you're showing the world that cops care, It's not just about hooking and booking. It's about being part of the community that really, really makes a difference. And I applaud you for that, Tim. Thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I appreciate the opportunity.
I want to tell you a little bit about my friends over at JSD Protective Services. If you have security needs anywhere in the country, those are the people to turn to. I can tell you this, that I've seen and dealt with a lot of security companies in my 34 years of policing. I've never seen a professionalism displayed by a security company as I have by JSD. Their motto pretty much tells it like it is. Their promise, available everywhere and at all times. They do everything. They really do. They do on-site security, armed security. They do courier stuff. They do private investigations. They do law enforcement. They do it all. And they do it well. And I can tell you this, that I met with some of their folks. They're very, very high quality. Their training is the best I've seen of any security company. It rivals that of law enforcement. So if you have any security needs, go to jsdprotectiveservices.com and check them out.
I'd like you to meet Lieutenant Randy Sutton, law enforcement veteran, author, podcast, and talk radio host of Blue Lives Radio on America Out Loud. Randy, whether it be a public event turned tragic or natural disaster, law enforcement is steadfast when it comes to public safety, even in spite of media criticisms. Why?
Because the men and women of law enforcement are dedicated to what they do. It's about service. It's about community.
Lieutenant Sutton, America Out Loud has a spotlight on law enforcement and our military. How has this impacted you in getting your message out on Blue Lives Radio?
Oh, it's been a life-changing experience, Malcolm. I mean, the opportunity to tell the truth, as we call it, the out loud truth, has been a life-changing opportunity for me. You know, as my role changed from being an active duty police officer to being an advocate for law enforcement, America Out Loud has provided a forum for that. And it's touched literally hundreds of thousands of lives, and it has deep meaning to them. It brings them the truth about law enforcement, and it helps to bridge some of those gaps that are taking place within our culture.
Our goal is simple: to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. It's to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications.
End of watch.
Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We honor those men and women of law enforcement who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have three names to read. Corporal Michael Paul Middlebrook of the Lafayette Police Department in Louisiana. Corporal Michael Middlebrook was shot and killed while responding to a shooting at a convenience store near the intersection of Moss and Van Buren Street at approximately 10 p.m. The call was originally dispatched as a person with a gun, but was upgraded to a shooting. As Corporal Middlebrook arrived on scene, a male subject opened fire on him, engaging him in a shootout. Corporal Middlebrook was fatally wounded during the exchange. The man fled the scene but was later arrested, charged with first-degree murder and three counts of attempted first-degree murder. Corporal Middlebrook had served with the Lafayette Police Department for 9 years. He is survived by his wife, three-year-old daughter, and two young stepdaughters. Corporal Michael Paul Middlebrook, Lafayette Police Department. End of watch, Sunday, October 1st, 2017. Police Officer Charleston Hartfield, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, Nevada. Police Officer Charles Hartfield was shot and killed while taking off-duty action to rescue citizens during the active shooter incident at the Route 91 Harvest Festival. Officer Hartfield was attending the concert with his wife when a gunman opened fire on the audience from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel. Hundreds of citizens were struck by gunfire. Officer Hartfield immediately attempted to assist some of those casualties when he was fatally struck by one of the rounds. The gunman committed suicide as members of the SWAT team made entry into the room he was barricaded in. 58 people were killed, over 500 wounded during the incident. Officer Hartfield was a U.S. Army veteran, had served the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department for 11 years. He survived by his wife and two children. Police Officer Charleston Hartfield, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. End of watch, Sunday, October 1st, 2017. Police Officer Floyd East Jr., the Texas Tech University Police Department in Texas. Police Officer Floyd East was shot and killed inside of the Texas Tech University Police Department while questioning a narcotic suspect at approximately 8:30 p.m. Officers were conducting a welfare check on a freshman student when they discovered narcotics and narcotics paraphernalia inside of his room. The subject was taken into custody, transported to the police station for further questioning. The subject, who was not handcuffed, shot Officer East in the back of the head with a .45 caliber pistol as he completed paperwork. The man then stole Officer East's body cam and fled the police station. He was arrested a short time later and charged with capital murder. Officer East is survived by his wife and two daughters. Police Officer Floyd East Jr., Texas Tech Police Department. End of watch, Monday, October 9th, 2017. Each of these law enforcement officers gave the ultimate sacrifice for their communities. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have four books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. Thanks again.